I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Dom Alessio, and this is Other Side of the Tracks. Each episode, we feature a new release and talk to the artist about the inspiration, meaning, and stories behind each song. In this episode, Polish Club welcomes you to Iguana, the much-awaited second album from the Sydney rock duo. Aware of the fabled sophomore slump, John Henry and Novak tested the breaking points of their musical and creative abilities as much as they did themselves. With the results showing that the hard work was very clearly worth it, the band has brought into the world an evolved sound, both expansive and adventurous, and of course, heaps fun. Here's Polish Club with Iguana.
Hi, I'm Novak.
Hey, I'm JH.
And we, together, are Polish Club, a rock band from Sydney, Australia. Yeah. We're going to take you through a track-by-track of our sophomore album called Iguana, which is out June 7 or out now, depending on when this podcast comes out. We started writing it immediately after we released in between EP, Okie Dokie, still available now. If you want to listen to that,
hasn't been deleted off the internet yet.
I don't believe it has. And we went straight into the studio to write, and then wrote some more, then recorded demos, then tracked some stuff, then threw that away, and then wrote some more, recorded.
We did a lot of traveling in 2018, which kind of slowed it down. But I feel like we really started working on it hardcore middle of 2018.
We had like three different recording sessions where we actually tracked song. Four,
yeah.
We did some up at the Grove in the Central Coast. We went there and stayed there for a week, lost our minds a little bit, had a lot of pizza, watched some NRL. That is literally the moment where we had our first single, Clarity, right? Yeah. We tracked that along with...
Everything was going well.
It was going great. We tracked it with another song that we thought was going to be on the album. Spoiler alert, it's not on the album. That was like, 4 days at the Grove, and then we did another week, months after that. We went to Germany.
Back to the Grove. Yeah, we went to Germany twice.
Fuck.
We went to Europe, played... Came back
with no money, spent the rest of our money.
I think we wrote a bit for a couple of weeks and then got another tour in Germany, went back to Germany. And then came back and then tried to record again.
I blew all our money on a session at the Grove.
But we used quite a lot of that.
Yeah, see, this is like the peaks and the troughs thing. At the end of that, at some point it was like, fuck, we have nothing. We got a single that's out already that people, I think, like... which is great, but we have nothing else. And people go, can't wait for the album. What does it sound like?
Yeah, we recorded, I think the second Grove session, we recorded like 10 or 8 songs. Mm. And then at the end of that, like our A&R and management were just like, there's no other second single here. And oh my God.
I'm getting like PTSD. Yeah.
That actually happened in this building.
Right? Yeah.
That was nice.
And we walked in, like strutted in to Universal.
Yeah, wait till you hear these eight tracks.
Throw the fucking USB or whatever on the desk and go, there, you put that in your gob. And it was just lukewarm reception.
And then since then, and that was kind of like a difficult thing because from there, we were just focusing on trying to write singles, which is not a way we usually write.
It's not a way anyone should write unless you are just recording a single and not, which I think that's why we found ourselves in those circumstances, because everyone around bands now are artists. Usually the plan is for like popular acts is to just drop single, like, you know, if you're the fucking Weeknd or whatever, he doesn't have to do an album. He'll just do singles until he dies. But for us, we're like, we have to have an album at the end of this. So like trying to hone in on one song that is, I don't know what, better or more consumable than the rest of it is just so counterproductive. Throughout the whole process and throughout our entire career in terms of like creative output, the one constant has been Wade Kieran or Big Sexy.
Or Uncle Wade.
Uncle Wade.
Anyway, he's
multi-leveled.
He did our first album and probably some demos before the album.
He did a bunch of demos. He produced entirely the first album. So we came back to what we were comfortable with, and it was Wade. And the same thing happened this time. And we tried to...
Yeah.
We got the first two singles, Clarity and We Don't Care, mixed by John Congleton in the States. He's great. And he kind of informed how the rest of it was mixed, but also because by the time we'd gotten all our shit together, we were super pressed for time, and it made more sense to use Wade to mix the rest of it.
But I think you got ahead of yourself there. I think Wade did produce and mixed the first album, and this time I think we decided that we'd get someone else to mix it.
We being you, me, and him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like,
so he's produced and engineered. He was going to produce and engineer it, and then John Congleton to do the first two songs. But then we were like, we really. Because we were trying to find a second single, like we got delayed a little bit, and didn't have time, so we had to like keep it.
But I think like also, he felt too close to it, and like not able to do something different or kind of see from the outside what could be the possibilities in terms of mixing. But having the two first singles go to someone else and like totally, you know, go against the grain of what his tendencies would be, kind of informed him in a way that would allow him to mix the rest of them and still be us, but have it be different. So I think it made sense to kind of split the duties that time. I guess like all the songs were informed by a period of us going through personal ups and downs, mostly downs, all three of us actually. And that often ends up with like going out and drinking or like being anxious. But it's like all of those emotions can kind of be seen as a microcosm or rather... the like a night out on the town doing stupid shit, and like how thinking about how you felt back when you were like a young kid and doing all that stuff is kind of a microcosm for all the stuff that came with what we were going through at the time.
I don't know, it's more, I thought the concept was like 2006 was the concept.
Yeah, but my take on that, yes, you're right, but my take on that is that concept of 2006, like all of the tent poles and pillars of what you feel in that, like whatever that experience you're being nostalgic about, is exactly the same feelings you're still feeling now. Like the moving parts of it, like going to Iguana and like
which is
smashing heaps of MDMA or whatever. It's like,
well,
those somewhat have changed. But like the emotional response to things are still in your brain. I still go through all that stuff. So I think it's like kind of this mix of nostalgia for that, but also like acknowledgement that it's like, oh yeah, shit's kind of the same. We just don't have anywhere to go out and drink anymore.
This is kind of on that little period where we were just trying desperately to get a second single done.
We wrote a song that sounded like Robin. We wrote a song that sounded
We literally wrote like 10 songs in a different genre.
Yeah, it was weird. And then we settled on, oh, we'll just write a rock song.
No, we did the 10 songs in a different genre and then we sent them to our people and they were like, Like that one song is like middle of the road. Every single other one is just shit.
We Don't Care is the first track on the album.
There's cowbell in this song, but it's apparently it's Wade hitting a vase.
It's an upside down copper vase with like sparkler. Party sparklers.
Yeah, like a little sparkle, just like, and then just like marked really closely.
And literal thigh slaps.
Thigh slap.
Oh my god. That was a day. We were trying to avoid what felt like the easy choice in like just soaring choruses, like three chord, just really kind of catchy, simple, anthemic stuff. But it's like, I guess you realize if you do it right, it works. And that's a lot easier said than done. And I guess that's kind of playing to our strengths more. Bleeding hymns, stretch your heart down to the vein. Go quote your favorite band. Say it like you mean it, man. But when I say it, it sounds lame. It's like the art.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You really were fighting against naming a song after the album.
Yeah.
What did you want to call it?
It's Cool.
It's Cool.
I still think that's a good name.
I think it's a fine name. Something about me always really got a bit giddy when albums had a title track. I don't know.
Yeah, it's okay.
I think especially because like it... It's not just a super random title track. It kind of fit in contextually, and it mentions it once in the song. It's not like too on the nose. I don't know. I like this song.
Yeah,
I counted today 7 or 8 guitars layered on top of each other at the end there, which is
Which is kind of a theme of this album.
Yeah, just like more. I don't. What's it missing? Just
put more guitar
on there. Yep. It's great. I love it.
Well, we got a slide. Can we slide the guitar somewhere?
John, you recorded the ambience, crosswalk signal.
I'm kind of
just outside of the studio.
I was obsessed with like the ambient thing. There's a few more times on the album where there's like just, and they're just iPhone recordings. And I think did he pitch the beep to the key?
I think it's way higher in real life. And like, but it made still sounds like super familiar, which is weird.
Yeah, and then made it the right tempo.
Yeah. He slowed it or sped it up, I think, so it's like on the 4/4 beat.
I guess we kind of started putting all the ambient stuff in after we kind of decided on the name Iguana, which is kind of like talks about, which is named after this shitty bar that we used to go to like really late at night in Sydney in King's Cross. But it was like the place where you used to go just like off your head. And like the sun would be almost coming up, and they just let you in there, like they just let anyone in there, no matter what state.
Yeah.
With consent. As we go through the album, there's other kind of little ambient things that are recorded around Sydney, at nighttime. And also, the song ends with me walking up the stairs. I can't remember where I did that. Maybe at my.
At work, probably.
Yeah, at work.
Beautiful. Track 3, Goddamn. I think it's a really important song to have on the album because it's like just straight up fun and not at all in a dark way. In terms of like the feel of it and the instrumentation, which we don't often do, I think. Which is great because, I don't know, it's just fun to be fun sometimes and not be too serious.
I think this song kind of just snuck on the album as well. It just like it kind of like we're like nah, and then we're like all right yeah, and then like kind of like tuck it in. We put it at the end, and then like right at the last minute, everyone's like, oh no, that's actually pretty good. Just put it up the front.
We went away from like fast paced, punky stuff, and soul stuff where there's like full chords and like a real straight beat that carries it. You have to add more to it because the stuff that we're doing is a bit more part-based, like a bit more lead-based sometimes. Mm. There's only one note on the guitar for the chorus of this, so it kind of necessitates that extra thing to make it a bit more catchy and a bit more full. So, I mean, knowing that we would tour this with Wade as a third player meant that we're like, fuck it, we can just add stuff and then work it out afterwards. And fortunately, that kind of makes sense now because we have the extra hands to do it live.
All these songs are still written just two-piece, like with a guitar and drums. And I think because we had more time in the studio as well, we had time to play around with some extra shit.
But I also think the world that the album sits in lends itself to having stuff like synth and like cheesy samples or whatnot.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of what made me comfortable with the kind of 2006 concept thing is each song kind of, all the songs kind of fit or kind of feel inspired by something that we were, like stuff we were listening to back then and kind of that was really influential for our music tastes as well, I guess.
Stuff that we were listening to back then. Stuff that we were both listening to back then and stuff that I'm still listening to today.
And going,
no, they're still making music, man. It's good.
And Novak still listens to Maximo Park, everyone.
Oh, man. I love it. They'll never die.
I don't know why this happened, but it's probably the song that we really worked most on ever. Like, there's so many different demos that we were trying. I guess maybe because I was just, like, freaking out and I wanted it to be...
No, I think because there's just heaps of moving parts to it that we haven't worked with before. And, like, the beat was a bit more complicated and, like... Or not even but, like, thought through?
Yeah, and we tracked it to... Click Track as well, which we didn't use Click Track for any of the first album.
But then it meant we could add all this stuff like congas and stuff, which is hilarious. And it's the first track that we have like that bullshit ambience stuff on.
Oh yeah, there's ambience in it as well.
Yeah, ambiance.
Interestingly, the pre-chorus and the chorus were kind of two chorus ideas.
Yeah, we just said put them both in.
Well, no, I think Wade was like, I think
you know what happened? Wade fucked up and nudged the
pre-chorus.
I'm trying to think if it's the pre-chorus or the chorus. I think it's the pre-chorus. He nudged it backwards.
Yeah, it sat on a different beat.
And it sat on like the one instead of the two or the three or something, and it like made it way better.
Yeah.
And that, like, that and turned then, into a pre-chorus.
Yeah, and then he was like, just use that other chorus idea as the chorus bit.
Which I think came about when someone was just like, just scream. Mm-hmm. Just fucking scream.
Which it's interesting how that happens.
I guess, like, the thing is we had a rule where we said no acoustic guitars ever, and there's a prominent one in this.
Yeah.
Break Apart. I think that whole theme of, like, we're taking references from when we're young and... It allows us to use all that stuff that we haven't used before. And also because we're not like a two-piece anymore, we can do that stuff and get away with it. I might stay forever. I may break your heart. I could stay or I could break it apart. Break it apart. I think the whole, like, lyrically, a lot of the album is just... being honest and not trying to be positive or negative about it. It's just kind of like being self-aware of your tendencies. And I think like being recently single when we were writing some of it, it's kind of just being at peace with like your pros and cons and being like, well, it may be great, it may be bad, but you know, it's kind of like a take it or leave it thing.
This one it's hard because it's the second album and it's like a bit of a crossroads thing. But now I feel like free free to do anything now? In a weird way?
Yeah, I think it's like a reset.
And it's got the vibraphone on it.
I picked it up one day.
I was asleep on the couch, I think.
You were asleep on the couch. I picked it up as a joke.
It was like 2 in the morning or something.
Yeah, and then Wade's like, no, we'll do it. So he started tracking it. And then I had to actually learn it on the vibraphone, that took a while. That was fun to do at 2 a.m. with everyone falling asleep. But I think you're passed out in bed, there's crickets at the end of it.
Oh, yeah, and that was another ambient thing.
You get to
the end of it, and, like, everyone's like, oh, fuck, it's like the whole album's like set at night.
Boom.
That's in 2006.
That's the twist at the end, yeah. Oh, crickets, 2006, oh my God. Yeah, so that's our album.
Yeah, cool.
Polish Club's new album, Iguana, is out now. For more, head to polishclub.co. Other Side of the Tracks is produced in Sydney, Australia, by U Music Media House, a subsidiary of Universal Music Australia. This episode was recorded and edited by the team at Forbes Street Studios in Woolloomooloo. For more, visit othersideofthetrackspod.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.